From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of July, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Matt Bennett from TGM will take us through the cash grain market for the day. Pete Levitt will look at the agricultural weather forecast. And we'll hear our biweekly In My Backyard segment with Lisa Braltz. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
On this Thursday afternoon in Chicago, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contracts in the soft red winter wheat pit were lower for the day. Nearby July, or rather September, is $6.77 and a quarter, down 19 and 3/4 cents. December at 7.16 and 3/4, 18 and a half cents lower. And next year's July down 17 and a half cents at $7.82 and a quarter a bushel in the wheat pit. From the corn pit in Chicago, $6.79 and a quarter. The September finished 8 and 3/4 lower. December at $6.73, down 4 and 3/4 for the harvest month. And the March corn at $6.85 and 3/4, down 4. May, $6.92 and a half, 4 lower. July at $6.98 and a half cents, down 3 and a half. And next year's December, a penny and a quarter cents higher at $6.13 a bushel. August soybean futures up 2 at $13.80 and a quarter. September at $13.81 and a quarter, 2 and a quarter higher. November at $13.88, up 4. January futures at $13.97 and a quarter, up 4 cents. In the March contract at $13.99 and 3/4, 4 and 3/4 higher. July beans $13.97, up 5 cents. In November of next year at $13.44, 7 cents higher on the afternoon. August bean meal at $3.62.70, 80 cents higher. August soybean oil down 29 cents at $56.48. The Mercantile Exchange settled the August live cattle futures at $110 even, up 40. October at $115.40, up a dime for the day. The August feeders at $135.20, 27 and a half cents higher for 100 pounds. And the September's at $135.80, up 17 and a half cents. August lean hogs, $98.10, 25 cents higher. October up 25 cents as well at $90.65. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside of markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the September at $99.34 a barrel, up 94 cents. Ethanol at $2.89 and a half, 0.3 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.39 and a tenth, up a dime and a 9 tenths. And the heating oil at $3.10 and 6 cents a cent, down a penny and a tenth. Actually, natural gas is down a down 10 and 9 tenths, not up 10 and 9 tenths. Gold futures at $1,586.80 an ounce, down $9.90. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 160 points higher at 12,732. The dollar at 73.9 is down 0.7. The CRB index at 345.2, down 1 even for the day. Here's what the weather forecast is calling for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny and hot outside. The skies on the plaza now are sunny, and it's 120 degrees in the heat index. And we're moving sharply through the 100-degree mark in actual temperatures outside. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 76 degrees, southwest winds at 6 miles an hour. And Friday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny. A high near 94. Heat index values as high as 109 tomorrow. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 76. Saturday, partly sunny, a high near 94. Saturday night, cloudy, a low of 76. Sunday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. It'll be sunny, a high of 91 degrees. Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms continues. Mostly cloudy, the low 73. Monday, mostly sunny and 87. Monday night, clear and cooler, 67 degrees. Tuesday, sunny, a high of 87. Tuesday night, it'll be 69 degrees. And Wednesday, sunny, a high near 89 degrees. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast comes to you at the bottom of the hour, when we'll talk with meteorologist Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line with us. Thanks, Dan, for taking the time.
How you doing, Todd?
Oh, I'm doing really well. It's better to be inside this afternoon than it is outside. And I suppose weather has been playing a big part in the marketplace. Was that continuation today, or are there other things happening?
Well, I think that's the principal driving force today. I mean, we've been in a hot and dry weather pattern, and now the weather models are at least moderating somewhat appear that they're going to allow some rain to kind of work its way through the Corn Belt. Not necessarily a big widespread 1 to 2 inch soaker, but there is chances that at least rain is going to work its way into the Midwest, and if that is the case, you never know. You may end up with better coverage than what you think. But, I mean, it does say that the weather pattern is shifted or will be shifting to something a little more normal. But, I've been watching computer models for some time, and tomorrow morning they could have a different look at them. But, so I think that kind of encouraged at least some long liquidation, at least in the corn market. Wheat took the hit the most, but wheat is, trying to pull out of a harvest low, and it's had some pretty wide swings in it. I don't see any damage to the decline here today as we try to pull out of a harvest low, but the market is jittery. The outside market activity, we do have gold down a little bit off of 1600, but thing that I notice in outside is the dollar is totally tanking. It's kind of breaking out of its sideways to higher move that has been in for the last few months, and that kind of indicates that we're getting ready to do another major leg to the downside, and we're going to challenge those 08 low points down there around the 70 cent area.
This time around, will it be good as it usually is when the dollar begins to move lower for the export market?
I think it'll be supportive to all commodity prices. I think how supportive, that'll probably depend upon, each individual commodity. But anytime you devalue the currency, it's going to take more dollars to buy a bushel of corn or a pound of steel or a pound of copper. So dollar weakness is bullish toward commodities. It's not necessarily good toward the consumer, but at least bullish toward commodities. And, I mean, I think what the dollar weakness is telling us is that Washington politicians ain't going to get their arms around anything. They're just going to keep punting and kicking the can down the road a little bit. In one sense, we're defaulting on our government bonds by devaluing the currency. It's just a slower pain than waking up someday and you just ain't got no money. So in essence, the debt is so bad that we're generally defaulting by weakening the dollar.
All right. Do you have a point at which in the charts that you would suggest that the world just gives up on the dollar?
Well, I think if you start making moves underneath those 07 lows, I think then you would be in a total collapse, and it would be a dollar crisis, something similar to what possibly the smaller European countries have been going through. So yeah, I would say the 70-cent level is going to be a point that if we would start going down and making new lows, new record lows for the dollar index, that anytime you make new record lows or record highs, that usually signals that you've got a pretty good move ahead of you for a while before they get it stopped.
And relatively speaking, we're at 74. So how far below 74 is 70 in the mind of most?
Well, that's not very much. I mean, when you're at 70 points here today, I mean, yesterday we were at, or today's high was at 75,
right.
And the way we're going, we're at 74.11. So you take a couple 100-point losses, all of a sudden we're down against those lows, And then the sale orders start building up underneath those orders, and then the market always goes where the orders are. So about the only thing I think could stop the dollar decline would be rising interest rates. I do think you got to watch that bond 30-year bond market. I think that could take off to the downside. But what rising interest rates are going to do to the economy and to our deficit. So it's interesting times in outside market activity. I don't think we've seen anything yet in volatility.
Let's come back to the commodity markets, corn in particular. I suspect you've been listening to the floor chatter there that's coming in from across the Midwest and about what is really happening in the fields. And I suppose most of that a question of is your corn look like it's the leaves are straight up and protecting itself, or is it still kind of laying out there okay? And what do you hear?
Well, I mean, it depends upon where you're at. If you're in the areas that have been real skimpy on precip over the past 2 to 3 weeks, you're under stress. If you're in the area that has caught a half an inch of rain here or half an inch there, you're in a little better condition. I think for the most part, what I hear from the field is that we have lost some yield potential, at least here in the Eastern Corn Belt. To what extent, that's what the market's going to argue about. Things look awful good in the Western Corn Belt, and then they picked up some rain overnight. There's no doubt about it. The dry land corn in Nebraska and Western Iowa is probably been dinged up pretty bad because they just can't stand the heat. It's hard enough to get the irrigation rigs to stay up with the heat. But things in Nebraska and Iowa seem to be in good shape. The biggest stress, I think, in our listening audience is probably Indiana. If you look at the preset maps, Indiana is probably under the gun more so than probably anybody, could lose some yield potential pretty quick unless this weather pattern that they're calling for breaks down and at least gives us some rain. I think when you look ahead, the trade feels that there's some downward adjustment to come in harvested acres for corn. And if you're not improving yield prospects but holding them steady or bringing them down some, that's generally positive toward a positive balance sheet as you go forward. Beans, the South is getting hurt pretty bad. I think the weather forecast keeps the South hot and dry, and I guess I'm still in the opinion that beans are going to plow through that $14 mark one of these days and never look back.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because the last couple of times you've been on, you told us that triple top there is made to go through, and we're at that point.
Yeah, we're right at the verge of it. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but that does not look like a top to me. That looks like just a big step to go higher on, a big giant step to go higher on. I guess as the space program ends today, maybe we'll have a space program in soybeans. To kind of finish off that. So,
are you telling me that the $6 move is only halfway? Is that what you just told me? Because I'm just sort of looking at it. $8 is down at the bottom, and we're at $14 from the top. That's $6. Is that 50%?
That could be. It could be.
Well, it's
going to be a new giant step for the bean spaceship. Maybe that's what will go. I don't know, but. I really would not want to see that because that tells me that we're in pretty bad shape in weather, and the last thing that we need here in agriculture with all of the volatility in the outside markets is a short crop that would ding up our demand base. So it's scary in here. I think there is no doubt about it that the market always takes you to the edge of the table, and we're definitely at the edge of the table here on it when it comes to the weather pattern.
On that note, I'll let you go for the day. Thanks, Dan.
Very well. Mm-hmm.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brotz says getting your hands dirty is not the only way to enjoy gardening. There's also good summertime reading that shares the virtues of the do-it-yourself garden movement.
I talk quite a bit about my neighbors. Not only are they masterful gardeners and stewards of bats and keepers of chickens and makers of sausage and dreamers and doers, they also know awesome people. Here's an example. Over the last two summers, my neighbors Ryan and Sarah have had writers staying at their houses. Writers either working on books or visiting Urbana-Champaign to talk about their books. A couple of weekends ago, they hosted artist and documentarian Daniel Tucker, co-author of a lovely book called Farm Together Now, which has a subtitle, A Portrait of People, Places, and Ideas for a New Food Movement. He was in town to give a talk about the book and to hang out a little in my neighborhood. Perfect. I set up a kitchen table interview for Sunday morning. Hey, I admit it, I'm a fan. I bought the book when it came out earlier this year because it seems so similar to some of the things that end up on In My Backyard, but with much wider geographical and social perspectives. The book tells 20 stories about people getting together and bucking cultural expectations or assumptions to, literally, farm together now. Daniel and his co-author Amy Franceschini spent months traveling the United States to talk with groups of people farming, distributing, eating, and in some cases living in ways that aren't exactly traditional. Daniel and Amy talked to people in densely populated urban areas like Chicago, Los Angeles, and others. They talked to people in sparsely populated rural areas in Nebraska and Colorado. They talked to people in intentional communities and people in boroughs of New York. They talked with people everywhere but places that look like my neighborhood in East Urbana. Neither Daniel nor Amy are farmers, nor are they food scholars. They share a common interest in food that informs their work as individuals and as writing partners. Amy's background is a little different from Daniel's. Her dad was a commercial almond farmer in California, and her mom was an old-school back-to-the-lander, while Daniel's experience is more peripheral. He visited farmers markets when he was a kid, and now he has a habit of trying different farm CSA boxes every year for the variety, both in terms of produce and agricultural practice. To that end, I was particularly interested in finding out if, during their interviews, they discovered any single common thread that ran through every story. As it turns out, the problem of accessing land to grow things and creative ways to acquire that land was a story they heard several times from several different people in wildly different situations. Over coffee Sunday morning, he described one such situation.
We had talked to someone in the Hudson Valley, New York, a project called Anarchy Apiaries, where the apiaries were set up on a bunch of different people's farms throughout the Hudson Valley. And it was done as a trade where in exchange for giving land for the bees for free, the landowners would get honey and they would get some tax breaks for basically agricultural uses of land that they were otherwise sort of sitting on.
What about the people coming to hear him talk on the book tour? I wanted to know. Who's coming to these events? I knew that in Urbana, I'd noticed a few people at his talk I'd never seen before, mixed in with the usual food suspects. His experience, he said, was that many of the people coming to hear him speak were already doing something food-related in their day-to-day lives, gardening, forming a co-op, or even farming, and they wanted to know how it measured up.
People are coming because they really want to hear stories about folks that are doing similar actions throughout the country. And they're really eager for those kind of examples and stories to basically know that what they're doing in their localized, you know, context is interconnected and similar to things that are happening elsewhere. And they want to also be able to compare and contrast.
So food projects are great. People farming together now, it's great. But what about farming together later? Is this interest in local food projects and community a fad, something people get tired of? Is it played out? Is it about to be forsaken for the next trend? Daniel thinks not.
Changing the way that we eat and that we treat land and treat each other are sort of interconnected practices, and they could point to a way out. and a way out that would actually make life better on the other end rather than just make it back the way it used to be.
This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Lisa Braltz's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us to take a look at the cash grain market now. Matt Bennett of TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are the crops holding up against the heat?
Oh, I don't know. They definitely struggling a little bit. You know, there's certain areas in the fields where there was stress earlier on in the year, and I think it's pretty well sapped it out of it. It's going to be tough for it to come back. But, you know, there's a lot of areas in some fields where it's still green from the ground on up. So I think that if we could get a little back off of the heat and maybe a little moisture this weekend, we'd still be okay.
How far along in the pollination and silking were you when we started into the heat, and how much of that's going to happen during this week and maybe next week?
Well, I think, you know, there was a fair amount of pollination that had already taken place before this, and then some of the stuff has been trying to pollinate through here. And, you know, some of these mornings whenever we woke up and saw actually a little bit of moisture in the air, and, you know, that's actually pretty decent for pollination. So I think most guys feel okay about it right now. I haven't heard too many guys going out in their fields looking because it's a little too hot to even try that, though.
It's 100 and what? It dropped just a degree. It's 119 on the heat index outside of our studios at this point. It would be really hot inside. I did make note that the corn just kind of, some depend on the corn and what's been happening with it. Some of it's still laying out really kind of open, soaking up the sunlight, so I suppose it's doing its job.
Right. You know, and I think a lot of guys are saying, well, some of it was rooted okay before this all, and then they think maybe our root system got established a little bit more through this. I know whenever corn gets a little taller, usually roots don't grow a whole lot, but, you know, I think most guys aren't as worried about it maybe as what you would think, but it's definitely been a hamper here lately. You know, whenever you walk outside, it about knocks you over, and, you know, it's pretty tough on a corn plant whenever it's 85 degrees overnight sometimes, so.
Let's switch gears and move to old crop. End users are really on the hunt for grain, aren't they?
Oh, no doubt about it. Some of these basis levels are amazing. Locally, the basis is fairly strong, but, you know, there's areas where, you know, maybe there's a livestock feeder or an ethanol plant that's hunting for corn that has had some profitability and wants to keep on running. You know, these guys are really paying up. There's definitely upwards of a dollar over the board going around. So, there's some awfully good basis levels.
It will end, and what do you see after that happens?
Well, you know, right now there's some pretty good bids, you know, to kind of address that and switch gears a little bit. The first half of September bids that are out for some elevators are fairly strong. I think what you're going to see is, you know, there's still a decent push, and there's still a sentiment there with some of the processors that origination may become a problem at some point. There wasn't a whole lot of early April planted stuff out there, so, you know, mid to late May, might not quite be ready until the last half of September. So, you know, we might be looking at a little lull there at the end of August, first of September, where originating corn might be a bit of a problem.
Matt, thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He comes to us from their Windsor, Illinois office place. I'll be back in 2 minutes for some of these radio stations with the ag weather. So long to the rest of you.
It's Junk Food Day. What constitutes junk food is often in the eye of the beholder. What constitutes unhealthy food includes elements of cultural influences, class snobbery, and moral judgment, and of course, quantitative measurements such as calories. On this day in agricultural history in 1694, George Brandt was born. Brandt, a Swedish chemist, discovered cobalt, which is added to steel to make it harder and have a higher melting point. Cobalt is also an essential part of vitamin B12. In 1873, it rained ants in Nancy, France. In 1917, the U.S. Senate voted on a food bill that, among other things, fixed the minimum price for wheat of $1.50 a bushel. In 1983, a new low record temperature was recorded at Vostok Station, Antarctica, minus 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And in 2006, the U.S. Senate voted after 2 days of emotional debate to expand federal funding of embryonic stem cell research, sending the measure to President George Bush for a promised veto. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you. Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt is on the phone line. Pete, it's awfully hot. We'll get to that in a moment, but it is the third Thursday. That means we've got some fresh reports from the National Weather Service.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd. We'll just do this rather quickly on the forecast for the month of August coming up for temperatures. They've got above normal temperatures forecast from the southern portions of Arizona, New Mexico, eastward across Texas, Oklahoma, southern Kansas, then continuing eastward to the South Atlantic coast. Nowhere above that do they call for above normal temperatures. Below normal temperatures actually show up in a little area around western North Dakota, eastern Montana. So based on that, August should not exceed an extension of the heat in the northern tier of the U.S. at any rate. On precipitation, it continues dry in Oklahoma, most of central and eastern Texas, Louisiana. Above normal precipitation, again, in Montana, western Dakotas, everybody else is forecast to average around the normals in some way. So that pretty much covers the 30-day forecast. The 90-day forecast does bring heat back up into the Midwest. Presumably that would be September and October.
Okay, speaking of heat in the Midwest, we certainly have it today, and I suspect we'll continue for a bit.
Yeah, right now the temperatures from southern Illinois clean up to Chicago and maybe the Moline area, the Quad Cities area, are ranging anywhere between 97 and 100 degrees at this hour. And those are accompanied by dew points in the mid-70s for the most part, the low to mid-70s. And we're not going to see much change in Illinois in the next 24 hours. Much cooler air has worked its way into Minnesota and the northern two-thirds of Iowa. We've seen some rain at Des Moines. The temperatures in Iowa now the upper 70s in northwest Iowa, and then ranging upward to those upper 90s again, and you get to the southeastern portion of the state along the river. We do have a front in there, of course, explaining why that temperature discrepancy. There's an awful lot of moisture pooled along that front, and that'll contribute to widespread showers and scattered thunderstorms. Most of these will be in southern Minnesota, northern and central Iowa, over into southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois over the next 24 to 36 hours. And this coming week, we'll see that area of showers lingering there through about maybe Monday and Tuesday before it finally dries out and temperatures come back up. The rain will bring cooler weather. So the northern half of the Corn Belt looks like they're going to get some relief. It's the southern half, Missouri, most of the southern half of Illinois, Indiana, that will continue to see warm weather through about Wednesday or Thursday, maybe a little cooler the end of next week. The key here is the dew points. And that's what's going to affect the corn crop, because corn crop needs cool temperatures at night so it can conserve energy for cooling itself off in the daytime. We don't see these 2 points dropping below 70s until midweek.
Thanks so much, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joining us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.